Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Andrea Gall. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, good evening.
I'm so happy to have you on the show.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. You always leave marvelous comments over on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. I said to you off air, every time I see your name pop up, I just know I'm going to enjoy whatever weird thing it is you write, whether it's your personal experiences with the show or your observations on the episodes we're discussing. So I figured it was high time to actually get you on the show. And thank you for saying yes. I appreciate it. Just because you leave comments doesn't mean you want to do the show necessarily. So I thank you for being here.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm nervous, but I'm excited as well. So, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. So, okay, we're here to talk about episode 16 from season 6, Patent 4077. It originally aired on January 10th, 1977. But before we get to all the details of this episode, Andrea, this is your first time on the show. Like, how did you become a fan of MASH?
Well, yeah, it was 1986. MASH is about to start its rerun on British TV. Wednesdays, 9 o'clock, BBC Two. I think all UK MASH fans remember that time and date because that was the time for MASH. I do actually have an appeal for any other UK fans there, because I have a memory, not long before MASH was about to start its rerun, that it was mentioned on the evening news. That it was about to start, and I remember my mum being very excited, and I remember the newscaster saying something about trying to catch up with the madcap medics of the 4077th, but nobody else seems to remember this, and I'm just wondering if it's a false memory or if I've mistaken a trail after the news for a news article, but it definitely felt like it was a news article.
Wow. Big deal. Big deal over there that MASH is going over.
It certainly felt like it. And I do remember my mum being really excited that MASH was about to start again, that MASH was back. And she watched avidly this trail or this news item. I'm not sure what it was. I'm sure it was a news item. Nobody else seems to remember it. So if any other UK viewers are out there that do remember this, please tell me I'm not going mad. I also have a bit of a confession to make, that when I first saw MASH, I was 9, 10, and I didn't know what the fuss was about at all. But I think I've heard a few people say that they weren't over keen on the show initially. It didn't appeal to what I was into at the time. I was a 9-year-old girl. I liked ponies and castles and princesses and that kind of thing. And there weren't that much of that in MASH. We did get horses eventually, but at the time, I thought, what on earth is, why are people getting excited about this? But then soon something, I think it was I Hate a Mystery, that episode really kind of appealed to me, the silliness, the wordplay, the funniness. And I thought, yeah, this is all right. And then very soon it became my favorite program. So, yeah, and here we are again. 30 something years later, here I am, still a fan.
Wow. Now, you said your mom was a big fan, so it played. Yeah. I think I asked Dr. Chris Lewis about this too, because of course he's from kind of sort of your neck of the woods, yes, and he grew up with it around the same time. Is that, not every American TV show made it over there, right? It was just selected ones. So MASH was one of the few that made it over.
Yeah. I remember MASH. Hill Street Blues was another favorite of my mum's. Those two mainly. Now, what was the other one that she liked? Soap.
I used to love that show.
That kind of thing. Cagney and Lacey, I remember being very popular. I think possibly more popular in the UK than the US, I think. That had a huge following. Yeah, so a lot of the American shows that I like are from that period. I tend to like British 60s shows or American 80s shows. So I'm another somebody that was on a few weeks ago is doing a podcast on The Prisoner, I think. And I'm a fan of that as well. So that's where we are.
Interesting. I wonder what it was about MASH that over other shows made it something that they thought would play over there, because it's so American. I mean, I know the themes are universal, but it's so filled with American references. You know, this is kind of curious to me that some shows didn't make it, but that MASH did.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure either, because I know a lot of the Americanisms went over my head when I was a youngster. And one of the things that always used to puzzle me when they used to talk about their beds is their cots, because a cot in British English is what you put a baby in. And I thought it was a joke saying how infantile everybody was. I didn't realize that's exactly what they were called.
That's great. I'd never heard that before.
And a lot of the American places. I collect postcards, and I'm currently collecting postcards of all the hometowns that are mentioned in MASH. So lots of places I'd never heard of as a youngster. And but I do hope to get to Ottumwa, Iowa one day. And because I'm a bit of a Radar fan. So
so when you say you get postcards, it's because you go there.
And no, I don't. Yourself?
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, all right. I was like, wow, how many places have you been?
Yeah. Okay. No, I just collect them from various places. Everybody knows that I collect postcards. So if they spot one, they'll send it to me, or I go to postcard fairs, or I'm a member of Post Crossing, or I used to be anyway. That was one of the other things that I did that I challenged myself to do. I set up a Post Crossing meet on the Isle of Man. I was saying to Rob before we started that I do like to do two things a year that I've never done before, and this is number one for 2023. So
I hope we're setting a good precedent for you for 2023. So okay, one other question before we move on. You said that 30 years later, you love MASH. Do you still love horses? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, I still like horses. I don't own any, and I haven't been riding for a long time. But yeah, I like horses. Okay. We've got the horse trams over here on the Isle of Man. They're one of the main tourist attractions. So I like to go on them when I can.
Now explain to people. Explain to people where exactly you're from. I found it very interesting when you told me where you are actually hailing from.
Yeah, I live in the Isle of Man, which is a crown dependency. So we're not part of the UK. We're an island in the Irish Sea. I live in Douglas, which was made a city last year in the Queen's Jubilee celebrations. So we do have connections with the UK, but we're not actually part of the UK.
Wow. Now, how big an island is that?
It's, 33 miles by, 15 miles. Population is 80 something thousand. I can't actually remember. Gosh, that's terrible.
It's pretty small then, I guess, generally.
Yeah, okay. it's pretty small. Yeah, it's small, but it's very diverse. It's there's so much to the island. We've got beaches, we've got castles, glens, nice theatre, parks, a lot of history. I'm not even from the Isle of Man, and I'm picking it up. So I've been here 20 something years now. So it is my adopted home.
Wow, you're really making quite an argument to move there, or at least check it out. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it is. And at the moment, we've got our TT races on, which is possibly what the island is most famous for overseas, as well as the Manx Cat. They're the two main things that people outside the island will know it for.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool. That sounds fantastic. All right. So, okay. Well, let's talk about this episode of MASH. As I mentioned, it's Patton 477 and originally aired January 10th, 77. It's written by Ken Levine, I always get that wrong, and David Isaacs, and directed by Harry Morgan, Colonel Potter himself. So Hawkeye is frustrated at trying to perform a tricky arterial operation without the proper instrument, a vascular clamp that is delicate enough to hold an artery, but without crushing it. The surgical staff decides to try and devise their own specially made clamp, first by asking the Army engineers. When the engineers turn them down, they try and make it themselves, but Hawkeye and BJ are mechanically inept. It doesn't help that Winchester tags along just to sit and laugh at them. In the mess tent, Sergeant Zale says he's a master craftsman and can make one himself. After some initial skepticism, they put him to work. A day later, he produces the clamp. Hawkeye and BJ test it out, but when it grips itself too tightly on Hawkeye's hand and can't be dislodged, it proves a failure. Zale, hurt, storms out, and Hawkeye and BJ are back at square one. Hawkeye, desperate, offers up the Army engineers a bunch of the 477's nurses as guests for their next unit party. BJ is horrified. Without checking with them first. They then have to go to the nurses and ask for this huge favor, but the nurses, of course, turn them down cold, explaining that the engineers are animals. On top of that, they're exhausted from all the work Margaret is throwing at them. She's in a foul mood ever since Klinger lost her wedding ring, tossing it accidentally into the trash. A Korean merchant named Mr. Shin comes by with his cart of handmade items, and he mentions that he has a ring that bears a striking resemblance to the one Margaret had. It's a cheap ring with an even cheaper diamond setting, typical of Donald Penobscot. They commission him to put in the original inscription and get Klinger off the hook. When they notice some of the other custom-made stuff, they ask Mr. Shin if he can try his hand at the new clamp. He offers them a deal on it since they're buying such a crappy ring. A few days later, Klinger tries to pass off the new ring as the original, but Mr. Shin messed up the inscription, tipping Margaret off. She thinks it's a joke at her expense, but Klinger tells her they were just trying to make her happy. In surgery, Hawkeye breaks in the clamp with a patient with a crushed artery, and it works perfectly. The surgery goes off without a hitch, and the patient's leg is saved. After showing off the clamp to the patient, they notice there's an inscription. Over hill, over dale, Korean clamp will never fail. And so that is patent 4077. Now, of course, like we normally do, we're going to go through this sort of beat by beat. But overall, Andrea, what's your impression of this episode?
Yeah, I like it. I prefer the story of the clamp to the story of Margaret's wedding ring. It is a bit of a pity that we already know from Comrades in Arms that the clamp was successful, because it does take away some of the jeopardy. I like it. It's not a top tier episode for me, but it's a good episode. It kind of reminds me of some of the earlier ones where they're up against the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. For example, the incubator.
Yes.
It's a good solid episode, and it's one of those that I do wonder how it would have worked if Frank had been there rather than Charles. Not that Charles does much, but I do think that Frank would have been a lot more antagonistic at wanting them to fail. Charles is cynical, but I think he does still actually want the clamp, whereas I don't think Frank actually would care one way or the other whether it was successful or not.
That's accurate. I think that's completely accurate. It is kind of funny how much Winchester, he's mocking them throughout the whole show. I mean, this will help him if they get this done.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of like, oh, all right, whatever. So, that's an interesting observation that, Frank Burns would probably actively be rooting against this just because he's such a twit.
Yeah.
It does remind me of the incubator. It's funny in that it's a simultaneous caper episode because we've got our heroes having to pull something off, but yet it's medically related. It's a nice combination of the two things. And it's okay, this is inspired by something that the doctors have to deal with, but it is also our heroes, as you say, kind of circumventing the bureaucracy to get it done.
Yeah.
So we have this opening scene in surgery where Hawkeye and Margaret are working on this patient. And we get into the initial idea of, this clamp isn't working and Margaret needs basically both her hands to operate this clamp. And so they need Father Mulcahy's assistance. And Mulcahy, of course, doesn't understand. And he's like, well, Hawkeye says, this is the wrong clamp. And Mulcahy's like, well, why don't we just get the right one? And he's like, well, because it doesn't exist. Okay. So that's what's going on. And so we said, Mulcahy has to step in and do suction here. And so we get right at the opening scene. We're already like, that's it. This is our problem for the episode. We have this thing, and this poor kid is going to, as Hawkeye surmises, lose his leg simply because the instrument isn't good enough to do the job. And as someone who feels things as deeply as Hawkeye does, we know that that's got to tear at him because this guy's going to have to live the whole life as an amputee simply because this little clamp doesn't work right. And that's got to be incredibly difficult to handle.
Yeah, that's right. I noticed they've been using Mulcahy quite a lot as a nurse recently, so it was interesting to see him there again in the operating theatre again. Yeah, you wonder whether if Radar had been in the episode, would they have roped him in as well?
He is once again not in this episode. He gets a lot of R&R this year.
Yes. Yeah.
He really gets a lot of vacation. I would think the doctors get more vacations than Radar, but apparently not. One of the things I noticed when going through this episode is I had forgotten how funny it is. When I was trying to compile my favorite line, I had about six nominees that I had to boil it down to.
I've got a few. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first one I love that's funny is that back in post-op but in the scrub room where the doctors are talking about the tool and they said, well, maybe no one's thought to ask. And Potter talks about the bureaucracy and he says, I put into the army permission to get married. By the time the papers came through, my son was divorced. Which is...
Yeah, I like that. I like the way Harry Morgan delivers it as well. We don't see a lot of him in this episode because he's directing, but he
sure.
that is a great line. One of my favorites. Yeah,
And of course Winchester, right from the very beginning, is completely skeptical of the Army Corps of Engineers, and he's like, you know, well, they can make a bulldozer or whatever. Again, he's sitting in the scene with the three of them. He's actually sitting there with his arms folded, just being like, you know, and he says, you know, they have never made anything than a glorified potato peeler. there is a great bit, another funny line where Hawkeye and BJ are talking about, you know, why are you being so cynical? And he says, you know, Hawkeye says, where would we be if Alexander Graham Bell hadn't invented the busy signal? And then BJ follows it up with my favorite, if Joseph Cotton hadn't invented the cotton gin. Which is...
lots of good lines. I like the banter between the three of them, I think, and I also think that the characters enjoy having somebody that they can bounce off, because again, Frank was not the sharpest of wits, and I do think that BJ and Hawkeye appreciate that Charles can hold his own, and that Charles can come out with some zingers as well. So I like the chemistry between the three of them, but it's that their relationship is kind of on an equal footing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I, by the way, I did want to say one thing about the cotton gin joke is that when I was a kid, when I watched the show, I had no idea who Joseph Cotton was, but I knew from the context that that's not who invented the cotton gin. I just was like, okay, now I know who Joseph Cotton is, but I love that they were able to write a joke that even a kid could get, because you just know, well, obviously someone named Joseph Cotton is not responsible for the cotton gin. So Margaret comes in and she's desperate to find this ring. She says the ring has been gone. And then she mentions it's a 14 karat gold with tiny stones all around. Every other three, a diamond chip. Again, it's the kind of thing where even as a kid, I didn't have any context for what that is. That a nice ring? I don't know. But I could just tell by the way that Winchester reacts, where he says he must have searched five and dimes the world over to find that ring. Like, oh, okay. It's a piece of crap.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what a five and dime was, but again, I got from the content that this is not an expensive ring.
So what's the British equivalent of a five and dime? What would you call that?
I don't know.
I mean, they have stores like that are these kinds of all-purpose sort of low-price stores.
Yeah, I guess it would be these days it would be a pound shop or a pound land or
right.
I don't know what it would have been then.
Yeah, now in America we have Dollar General and Dollar Tree, and everything's a dollar, and that's the basic kind of equivalent of that.
We have things like that, although again the Isle of Man is different because we have or equivalent to the pound shop, everything is £1.20. So
okay, that doesn't have the same ring to it. The dollar.
No, it doesn't. No, it's no. It's
So Klinger walks in wearing this absolutely hideous scrub woman costume. It looks absolutely ridiculous. And he, of course, he spots the ring, and he's like, oh, I sort of threw it away, and she literally starts strangling him. Which is like, you know, a little much. And then he says, oh no, I threw it in the trash. And he says, you know, well, the trash just came. And they said, well, go chase it. Not a chance. He's got to be miles from here. And love, she just starts screaming at him.
Yes,
and I love his response. He just goes, I'll get a Jeep. And he just takes off.
Yes. Yeah. You don't want to be on Margaret's bad side.
No. Sorry, I love that she's just, so she's really mad this season. Like,
yeah,
I mean, part of it is all the stuff with Donald, but yeah, she's in a rage in a lot of episodes this season.
And she really is, because she takes it out on the nurses later as well, and poor Klinger as well gets it even when he's trying to help.
Right. Yeah. I love when he yells, I'll get a Jeep. He actually jumps in the air. He actually does like a little pirouette almost. I'll get a Jeep. So then we follow up in Radar's office, or Klinger's office, I guess. And our three main guys are talking to the Army Corps of Engineers. There's another great line where Hawkeye can't get anywhere. And Potter goes, give me the phone. And Hawkeye just says to the guy, oh, now you've done it. You're in trouble now. And I love that when Colonel Potter asks the guy to talk to his colonel, he says, get your Colonel Daru on the phone. He's talking to the guy and he says, this is Colonel Potter. He's actually pulling on his collar.
Yes.
Yeah. Sort of weird physical gesture as if he can see him of what he's talking about or something. I love that.
Yeah, that's a nice touch. As I say, we don't see a lot of Colonel Potter this episode, but he's what we do see and what we do hear from is great stuff.
Yeah, I really, really love it. It's very funny. And the extent, and I mean, I said as director, the last episode that actually not the last one, the first one that Harry Morgan directed in season 4, which was the Novocaine mutiny. He is not in the episode hardly at all. He's in the opening scene and then he's kind of during the interstitials during the trial. But that one, he is, you know, they purposely wrote him out of the episode. Here, he's got a little more to do. But yeah, as you say, not a lot, which makes sense. He's directing, you know, he wants to be able to focus on that. I found it really interesting that they're looking through it, that Harry Morgan basically directed every season, at least one an episode until the end of the show. So that was something he obviously really enjoyed. Outside of Alan Alda, I think he directed the most episodes of any of the cast members. Almost everybody got a turn. Jamie Farr, Mike Farrell. But again, other than Alda, Harry Morgan had racked up the most directorial credits on this show. So Colonel Potter is trying to argue with this Colonel Daru, and he says, you know, 90 days, and BJ gets a joke in 90 days. That's... Winchester operates faster than that, you know.
Yeah, I've made a note of that line. That's one of my favorite lines. I like that they're still referencing that Giles takes his time operating.
So they finally decide, you know, Potter says, well, why don't you guys, you know, how are you guys do it yourself? And so they're like, all right, let's give it a shot. And then we go to the lab. Hawkeye and BJ are going to try and craft this tool themselves. This scene, cut in syndication. Never saw this until I got the DVD. This whole scene. They underscore, coming just off the Comrades in Arms two-parter, that Hawkeye, even for the average person, Hawkeye is subpar.
Yes.
Physical things. I mean, even whatever the baseline is for the average person, he is far below that, because BJ is actually trying to fix it. He's got his screwdriver out and he's pulling the pieces apart. But Hawkeye is just completely hapless. So they are really getting across this year that for a guy who is so wonderful at managing a scalpel, when it comes to anything mechanical, he is beyond inept.
That's true, and it's an interesting detail, really, that they give him flaws like that. It definitely makes him more human, that he's not this guy that excels at everything. That he does have things that he's not so good at as well.
Now that inspires me to ask you, Andrea, is there something, and I'll answer this, putting you on the spot. Is there something that like you have to do, everyone has to do in kind of daily life or normal life that you find yourself to be just woefully not good at? Is there something that's like frustrating? Like, I just can't get this thing.
There are many things, but I can't cook. So that's something that I struggle with. I'm incredibly accident prone in the kitchen. I got a wok for Christmas and I used it twice and I burnt it and I set the fire alarms off in the flat. So So I try not to cook unless I absolutely have to. Cooking definitely. I'm a disaster when anything to do with a kitchen or anything. I mean, I am the kiss of death when it comes to vacuum cleaners. I don't know what I do, but again, I use them maybe 3 times and then they just seem to stop working. I think I've got 4 vacuum cleaners in the house in the flat, and I think only one of them works. And I do actually quite like vacuuming as well, but I don't enjoy cooking. But
it doesn't like you, obviously.
No, it doesn't. No. But I try not to cook. I try not to. I like food, but I don't particularly like cooking.
Well, that's good. Are there a lot of good takeout places on the island, at least?
Yeah. Yeah, not bad. I've got quite a few near me. There's a fish and chip shop, obviously, Chinese. So yeah, a pizza place. So yeah, not bad. I don't do bad.
That's good. Good, good, good. You're not
Yeah.
starving. That's good. I will, okay, since I was intrusive enough to ask you that question, I will answer myself. I am bad. I have always been bad, and I am getting worse at directions. I don't know what is wrong with me, but even with GPS in my phone now, I have a thing. I have a computer that is talking to the satellites that are telling me where to go. I will still get lost. I didn't used to be this bad. I have to think that because I'm reliant so much on my phone now to get me places, that that muscle in my brain has atrophied even further. But if I go somewhere, even if I'm, again, even if I have a GPS and it is telling me, go here, right? And then I get to a point where I could go, say, left or right, or let nothing say left or right. There's two options, and like my phone is not giving me the directions fast enough. I will inevitably pick the wrong one every single time. And luckily, my wife is exceptional at directions. I mean, we can walk one time and she'll be able to remember how to get back. And so thankfully to her. And so when I've told her about trips I've made pre-meeting her, she's like, "You got there on your own?" I'm like, "I did. I did. I really did. I drove to Boston once to go to a concert, and that was like pre-cell phone. And I'm like, I made it back. I'm here. I didn't die." But and it's actually makes me sad because I shouldn't be this bad at it. I'm a grown man. I should be able to find my way around basic, but I'm getting so terrible at it. So I do feel like, and I do feel, luckily my wife is much nicer to me about it than Marjorie, the Hawkeye. But when I do get lost, I do feel that, that kind of the way people react to Hawkeye of like, what is your, what? Why can't you do this? That kind of thing. So,
Do you think technology has made it worse somehow then?
I think I honestly think
That
because I don't have to figure it out for myself, that's made it worse. I don't know, but it is just absolutely, it is astounding how bad I am at this stuff. And so to that, I will, if I have a really important trip, and if it's not really far, like I will go and like even scope it out first to test it to make sure. Like, oh, that's the door I'm looking for. It's really pathetic. It's just incredibly pathetic. So, okay, enough for the confessional. So the one little detail in the scene where they're trying to build the clamp is that we mentioned Winchester brings his lunch to just watch them fail, which he's just being a real dick about it. And
Yes, I feel that he's a bit too like Frank in that scene, that he's just sort of watching and laughing at them at them fail. Like that seems very that seems like a Frank thing to do. Sorry, I interrupted you then.
Oh,
Sorry about
no, not at all. I was just going to say that
that.
Winchester brings eggs to eat, and as
Yes.
retaliation, BJ smashes them with the hammer, which what we know about the 477, fresh eggs are nearly impossible to get. So that's a real, first of all, I don't know where Winchester got them, but that is no small thing to do to somebody when everyone's eating powdered eggs all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I've made a note of that as well. It's something that I've noticed before when I think they use eggs when they put eggs in somebody's helmet or a couple of times it that they've done, and I thought, gosh, what a waste.
BJ put the egg in Frank's helmet during the Dear Sigmund
Yes,
episodes.
that's
But
right.
but there's an episode later on in like season 9 where they make a big deal about fresh eggs, that there's a farmer who's giving them fresh eggs. So it's just like, wow, thank you. I mean, I know Winchester's being a jerk, but geez, BJ. But okay. So they give up on that. They go to the mess tent, and Zale shows up and says, "I hear you guys need a clamp." And he says, "I can do anything. I can make anything I want." And he talks about that he fixes the jukebox every time the Marines get through with it in the O Club. And BJ is kind of a little bit dismissive, saying, "Well, this is a little more delicate than a jukebox." And we can see that Zale is more interested in kind of the glory of it. He's like, "I could see it. Zale's gift to medicine." And they're telling him about all the different rules this thing's gonna have to follow. It's gonna have to be tight enough to hold the vein, but the artery, but not too tight that it crushes it. And you could sort of get the sense he's not really listening. He's kind of going,
No, yeah.
"Yeah." And so you are a little like, is he really understanding what they're going to do? But they give him the chance. They give him the chance.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I do feel a bit sorry for Zale when it eventually shows him the clamp and it doesn't work. I know he bigged himself up a bit too much, but you can't help but feel a little bit sorry for him.
There's something about that scene I even want to point out when we get to it. But this is kind of a big part for Johnny Hamer, Sergeant Zale. Yes. He's obviously been on the show in fits and starts since season 2. But here he gets more to do season 6, much like Nurse Bigelow. I think he gets more to do in season 6 than any other season. I mean, he shows up a lot and this is probably outside of the fight that he had with Klinger in season 5, this is probably the biggest role he gets. So there's another scene with Margaret and Klinger where he comes back from the garbage dump and we see that he's got all this dirt on him and he's like, I'm tired, I'm dirty, and I burnt my nose. And he talks about, and he can't find the ring. And Margaret says, I'm going to make your life miserable. And he's like, I got to be on KP. I don't have time to shower. How are you going to make my life any more rottener? And Margaret is, I'll work on it. And
is it this scene or is it later where we get another reference to Margaret's whip?
No, later on. The whip. I'm getting my whip. that's later on. And he did. Yeah, you feel bad for him. Imagine trying to find a wedding ring in a pile of garbage. Come on. Then we're back in the swamp and Hawkeye and Winchester are playing chess. Winchester, of course, is wiping the floor with Hawkeye, as you might expect. In fact, he's not even paying attention. He's actually reading a book while he's playing Hawkeye, and Hawkeye makes one move and Winchester just, kings him, and that's the end of that. So Zale shows up with the clamp and they're like, looks good. It looks like it works. It looks like it's got the right tension. They put it on Hawkeye's hand, like that webbing on the inside of his, between his thumb and his forefinger. Winchester initially doesn't believe it's going to work. Yes. He kind of takes one look and he's like, oh, it's not going to work. Hawkeye tries it. He puts it on the webbing and he finds that it is holding the skin between his thumb and forefinger too tightly. And on top of that, the clamp, you can't unroll it. And in fact, it's tightening and it's making it worse and worse and worse. And so we see Hawkeye starts to scream in pain. BJ tries to fix it. And, Hawkeye actually yells out a blood-curdling scream right in BJ's ear. And we can actually see the look of annoyance on BJ's face. He's just kind of rolling like, all right, Hawkeye, whatever. And the three of them start tugging on this thing, and it falls off and breaks into pieces. And Hawkeye and BJ mock Zale, and they say, why don't you go back to your drawing table and blow it up? And as you mentioned, it's where Zale says, this was all the work I put into it, and this is the thanks I get. And I'm on Zale's side on this one.
I mean, I know he was looking for heroics and he possibly, as I say, big dealed himself a bit, but I feel sorry for him. They could have given him another chance. They could have explained more what they were looking for, given him another chance, because it still would have been quicker than 90 days, I think, if he'd had another go at it. So one thing I do think it's interesting is the parallel with Zale and Klinger, because Klinger is also kind of mistreated by the officers. And I would have liked to have seen a scene perhaps with Klinger and Zale finding common ground, I guess. They've always been enemies before, but it would have been quite interesting to
I never
see
thought
them
of that.
With each other. Yeah. I think that would have been quite a nice scene to see them.
I never thought of that. That's right. Those two hate each other so much. I actually, there's another scene coming up that to me is a nice contrast or an inadvertent contrast to the scene we just saw, but I never thought about that. But yeah, that would have been marvelous, Andrea, to have the two of them be like, for once, not wanting to belt each other because they're both like, yeah, boy, officers, huh? Oh, that's great. Oh, geez. Oh, now we're going to have to write that out off the air. We'll MASH fanfic that. So that's the act break. We come back and Hawkeye and BJ are talking to the engineers and we find out that, they'll do it, but only if the MASH unit will send some nurses. And BJ is like, you know, no, no way, never. And Hawkeye's like, yeah, sure. Which is terrible. And I love that he makes this strange formulation where he says, we can get you four brunettes or two dirty blondes and a redhead. So I liked it. Two dirty blondes and a redhead. Three women with that hair color is equal to four women of the other hair color.
Yes. Yeah, it's different times. Watching that now, and I'm pleased that at least that BJ does have some morals to say no, to be horrified and to say no, we can't do this, because I don't think Hawkeye has thought about that. Thought about the implications, and
no, he just barrels through it.
Yeah.
Although he does realize as soon as he hangs up. He goes, oh, well, what I did.
Yeah.
He promised yeah. Other, you know, he just promised the nurses without running it by them. So, yeah, no, not a good idea. So then we cut back. We cut to the nurse's tent, where we see, as you mentioned, Margaret is running them ragged because she's in a bad mood about the missing ring. The two nurses, one is Patricia Stevens, who is the Velma.
I didn't recognize initially with the, it took a while to twig that was Patricia Stevens.
We've seen her on the show a bunch of times before. So one of multiple episodes. The other nurse is making, the actress is named Brenda Thompson. She plays Nurse Thompson. They really went out of their way to come up with a clever name for her here. This is her one and only appearance on MASH. She was on TV shows like Murder, She Wrote, Dynasty, Perfect Strangers. And she was a voice on all the episodes of the 70s Godzilla cartoon. I'm going to assume that did not make its way over by you.
Is that the one with Godzuki?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes, I do remember that. Up from the Death. Yes, gosh, that's unlocked a long-forgotten memory.
And Godzuki.
That did make it here, yeah.
Wow, okay. See, now I cast aspersions on Godzilla. Joke is on me, so there you go. And we see that. So with these two nurses, again, no Nurse Kelly. I don't know why. I don't know why Nurse Kelly doesn't get in on these scenes, but okay. So they're exhausted. Hawkeye and BJ walk in, and they could tell by the, BJ, Hawkeye starts going into his spiel. And I love that Nurse Stevens is like, here it comes. Like, they know it's a scam. And they try and pitch this. And once they mention that it's the Army Corps of Engineers, they're like, no, those guys are animals. And they say, well, come on, we'll get the surgical clamp out of this. And they even say, not even for world peace. And so they're not another great funny line where the two nurses, they stand up, they just wave their heads no, and BJ goes, I was wrong, they love the idea. I love this little aside. I was wrong, they love the idea. And and they just tell them, no, we're not doing it. And then Margaret comes in, and she's got her clipboard, of course, her mighty clipboard.
Yeah.
And she tells the nurses, you're off by 10 thermometers, which doesn't sound like that bad. I don't know. 10 thermometers. Those are kind of tiny. And, Major, that'll take hours. And she's like, that's too bad. Go get going. Hawkeye and BJ try to pitch it to Margaret, which she has no time for. So they walk out, and now they are back to square one. What are we going to do? What are we going to do to get this implement? And that is where we meet Mr. Shin. And Mr. Shin is played by Key Luke, the legendary actor, Key Luke. You go to his IMDb page, he has 231 credits.
I noticed that. He's another voiceover artist as well, because with Scooby-Doo, along with Patricia Stevens.
He did everything. Everything. He played Kato in the Green Hornet movie serials in the 40s. He was in the Charlie Chan movies in the 30s and 40s. Yeah. He was in Gremlins. He passed away in 1991, but he did voiceover work. I mean, just one of the amazing careers in Hollywood. And even more impressive when you think about when he started.
Yes.
In the 30s, where Asian actors weren't given a lot of parts outside of very stereotypical roles. But he persevered. And I mean, just 231 things. That's just an astounding career. And he's marvelous here. I mean, this is not his first episode of MASH.
Yeah.
He's very funny. He kind of reminds me of my Uncle Fred, I have to say. He has this kind of, I can do anything. I can build anything. My Uncle Fred was a great tinkerer and a great builder. And I love when he tries to sell the guys on stuff and they walk away and he goes, oh, go away. You know, if you can't spot quality, who needs you? And
I'm curious as to, because he's got the same hat as Father Mulcahy, and I'm curious as to, you know, where they got that from.
I never noticed that before.
Did he sell a hat to Father Mulcahy, or did they go to the same place to get them, or has he picked it up somewhere? I notice hats. I like hats, so I was curious about that.
Interesting. They both got in Tokyo or something. Oh, Mulcahy was on his way to the 477.
Yeah,
he got it
possibly.
There. So they talk about rings. They talk about, do you have any rings? And he says, oh no, you wouldn't like what I got. Every three stones a diamond ship. That's exactly it. And he talks about cheap setting, miracle glue, you know, and they're like, yeah, that's it. And he said, that fits Penobscot style. The guy in Tokyo makes them by the dozen.
That sounds like Penobscot.
So I love this. He's like, you know, he's made the sale. And he's like, I guess he's ready to put it in this little Mr. Shin gift bag or something. And they're like, wait, can you do an inscription? And he says, oh, you want your name? He says, you want your name on this? And then he says, Overhill, BJ does it. Overhill, Overdale, our love will never fail. And Mr. Shin goes, P-U. And all kinds of goes, yes, it is lovely.
Yeah, it's kind of fitting, though, that it's from a military march, very patriotic, and definitely, I could definitely see Margaret being impressed by that, even if the ring is rather crummy, that she would be impressed by that Overhill, Overdale sentiment.
Yeah, it is. It's perfect. It's perfect for the two of them. Yeah, you know, yeah, it really is. It's unoriginal. Which is very Penobscot style, you know, that
absolutely.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you imagine what other nicer rings he got for his side pieces or whatever he's doing. So he sells the rings and he says, I'm going to charge you $25, which nowadays would be like $250. So not nothing, you know, not nothing. I mean, Hawkeye and BJ, I guess, have that money. Maybe they'll take up a collection, you know, from everybody to get Margaret to simmer down. And so Mr. Chin says, can I show you some nice stuff? And they're like, no, we already used up our allowance. And then he says, do we have to go through that again? I love that he just bullies them into buying stuff. it's so warm and avuncular, but I just like that that's his sales pitch. It's just, I'm going to berate my customers until they give in. So he starts telling him about the stuff that he makes, a silver snuff box. And of course, then Hawkeye and BJ get the idea. Hey, wait a minute. Could you make something like this? And he looks at it. And he says, $10. And they're like, only 10? And he says, anyone who buys this crummy ring deserves a break. I really wish he had been in more episodes.
I like
Mr. Shin. Yeah. He's a fun character.
Yeah.
So
he's very good.
Yeah, he really is very, very funny. So we get, we cut to a little time later, presumably a day or two later. Klinger is on the kitchen scrubbing pots. I guess this is, I don't know if the scrubbing pots is KP exactly. I always know that KP is like, you're literally like peeling potatoes and preparing the food.
Yeah.
I don't know if scrubbing pots is like a separate thing, or it's all just kitchen duty is KP and KP is kitchen duty. I don't know the difference.
Yeah. I think it all comes under the same umbrella, I think.
Maybe so. Those of you out there that are in the military who've been on the show, Major Joe Price, Captain Entropy, let me know if you guys know what KP, if this is KP, what Klinger is doing. So anyway, they bring in the ring and they tell him, hey, we got you this ring, which is an incredibly nice gesture on their part. And they hand it to Klinger, and Klinger, within 1.5 seconds, drops the ring into the tub of water. So you just, you just can't trust him with.
No. Yeah, I don't remember Klinger being that clumsy before. It just seems to be an attribute for this episode.
I mean, part of it is hands are full of soapy water, so they're slicker.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of like, you just, to me, it's like you take the precaution. It's kind of like if I ever go to the bathroom, if I have my cell phone with me for some reason, I make sure that like the lid to everything is down because inevitably that's where the phone will go. If I leave that big target there, it's going to happen. So yeah, Klinger's just not, but then, anyway, I love, and then Hawkeye says, get it before it dissolves, which is just great. So then we go to Margaret's tent and we see that she's doing her nails with this incredibly neon kind of orangey color. Would you ever use that color, Andrea?
No, it's not my color.
It's a very bright color. I mean, it's kind of an un-Margaret-y color. I would say, you know, it's very noticeable. Although she's doing her toenail, so nobody will see it anyway. she's doing it. There's a knock which causes her to move her hand, and her hand jerks and she drags the little brush up her leg, and so she paints her leg, and then we realize that it's Klinger and he won't come in. And that's when that gets the line about I'm getting my whip. That's the good about where she's getting mad that he's out there, and he comes in and he says, I got the ring, and he tells this whole story about I combed into the trail and I'm on my hands and knees, too tired to go on. I looked up and there it was in the garbage dump, sitting perched majestically on a pile of mildewed weenies. She comes up with this whole, you know, this whole story, and she's polishing it with her shirt. She even gives him a hug. She's like, how can I thank you? And he's like, I could borrow that nail polish if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's definitely more Klinger than Margaret, I think, that nail polish. Yeah.
You see why he'd be attracted to it. And then the jig is up, because she looks at the inscription and she says, over hill, over dale, our love will ever fail.
Yeah.
Which just that one letter changes the meaning of the inscription, most certainly. So we realize that, this is not the ring. So not that's ring. A bit it's, of a problem.
Yeah. It's a touch of foreshadowing as well, because we know that the relationship, well, eventually we know that the relationship does fail. So,
It's actually a more meaningful inscription when you think about it. And Klinger doesn't understand. And she says, the N is missing. And the N, she says, N as in nincompoop, as in knucklehead, which of course. I love that Klinger's like, still rhymes. And we see that Margaret actually starts to kind of like tear up just a little bit, because she's really hurt. And then Klinger slips. And he says, we were just trying to make you feel better. We and Hawkeye and BJ bought it and gave it to me to give to you. And she immediately kind of reverts to their old relationship, where she says, I should have known those two weasels would be in on this.
Yes.
Go tell your accomplices that their charade didn't work. And she's assuming that they're pulling a gag on them, which I would think she would know BJ would not be in on that. Maybe Trapper, but not BJ.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, I can understand her being upset at that if she thinks that people that she has now become close to, Hawkeye in particular, would do that and pull a prank on her. So I do understand. It's not just about losing the ring. It's about thinking that your friends are playing a prank on you or don't have your best interests at heart. So I know she's harsh on them and on Klinger, but I understand her being upset.
Yeah, I'm right. If you especially think that they are trying to pull something on you, and then Klinger has enough fortitude to say, Major, you're wrong, which is gutsy. And she yells, you know, she's like, what? And he says, nobody was trying to make a fool out of you. We just wanted to have your ring back. That's all. And then he says, you don't have to be grateful, but would it hurt to at least appreciate the effort? And he walks out at that point. And, you know, great point, except for the fact that speech should have been given to Hawkeye and BJ when they're talking to Zale.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the show is kind of making this grand point, and it's a good point that, the effort was made to make you feel better. Sorry, we screwed up. But it's kind of weird that the show doesn't grant that to Zale, who deserves it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like the way Jamie plays it. He's quite calm and understated, the way he plays that, and it feels very real. I like how he does that. He's not shouting or matching her energy. He's just very calm and very, and it definitely feels more, oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's got a lot of pathos, I would say.
Yes, yeah, very, you know? Yeah, definitely. But I like that scene. I mean, I feel sorry for both of them, because she has been harsh on Klinger when he's trying to do right by her, but I do feel sorry for Margaret as well, because she's lost something which she sees as a token from her husband. Obviously it's not the ring that she thought it was, and she's also sort of feels that she's being played a fool by giving the ring. So I empathize with both of them in that situation.
Yeah, her marriage is taking a lot of hits this year.
Then
you could argue that maybe, yeah, the, you know, what if the relationship is bad, what, who cares about the ring? But you know what, it could just be a symbolic.
Yes.
I mean, of course, yeah. It's symbolic. That's what they are. But yeah, Margaret could be, I just have this one nice thing? Have this ring? Do I have to lose that as well? But you're right. And you know, for Klinger, it takes a lot of fortitude to keep calm when someone is screaming at you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not good at that. I tend to shirk from, you know, when people are screaming at me. I don't necessarily have the wherewithal in the moment to make my argument when someone is just barreling at me, because I just kind of back down. But he is able to, you know, it's corporal to major, say, you're wrong about this.
Yes.
You're wrong. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I actually imagined a scene with Hawkeye and BJ buying Zale a beer. Mm-hmm. To apologize. But I like your scene better. I like your idea better, that Klinger and Zale would commiserate. That actually would have been really funny. So wounded arrive, and we see Hawkeye's doing triage, and he talks about he says Potter's already scrubbing up, which of course is a convenient way of getting him out of the scene, because Harry Morgan's busy directing. We see a patient named Cohen, and he has got a crushed artery, and so he might be the kind of patient that is could lose a limb. If they can't fix the artery. But of course, we have this new tool. He's played by an actor named Harry Vold, who was in movies like Carrie, Gene Wilder's movie, The World's Greatest Lover, the disco musical Thank God It's Friday, starring the Village People. And then he doesn't have any credits past 1982, but he is still alive, because I saw that he became a talent agent. So he's now a talent agent. He's been a very, very successful talent agent for the last 40 years in Hollywood. So good for him.
Wow. Brilliant. Yeah, good for him. Yeah.
I wonder how you make that leap over, but yeah. they realize that he is going to be, you know, the test case. And then we're in surgery, and they're getting ready to use the implement, and everyone is sort of doing a symbolic, I'm crossing my fingers, I'm crossing my toes, I'm doing this. And of course, Winchester says, why don't we get out all our rabbit's feet and give them one big rub? So he, you know, read the room, Charles, you know.
Yeah. Although I do wonder, though, why they didn't decide to test the clamp on themselves this time before trying out, because they're kind of using it blind, really.
That's true.
We don't see a scene where they test it and see if it does actually work, which I thought they would have done, especially as he made a mistake on the inscription. They're very very confident that this is going to work. Obviously, the episode is only 25 minutes, and they can't have all these scenes, but it did make me wonder. I thought perhaps, gosh, is there something being cut? Am I missing something here? But no, they don't. They do test it blind on that patient without ever having tried it on themselves first, which I did find slightly odd. that's by the by, I suppose.
In the 40 years I've been watching this episode, I never thought of that. But it makes total sense. You're like, or they could have written something where they get it in. Just as wounded or arriving, so there's no time to even fix it. But you're right. Obviously, there's some amount of time has passed that they would be testing it. But and you know what? Maybe if we want to, like, parlance of Marvel Comics, no prize it, that like they did test it. But it's one thing to test it on your hand. It's another thing to actually test it on an arm.
So
they're working on this patient, and Margaret and Hawkeye have a little conversation where she talks about the Klinger found the ring, and then she reveals, no, it's not the original ring. It's a cheap copy, and I like it a lot better.
Yeah.
And she says, thank you. And he says, anytime, which is a nice nice seam between the two of them.
Yeah, it's a nice resolution. Although it would have been nice for her to apologize to Klinger or to thank Klinger as well. But yeah. Right.
Again, we can't. These shows can't be 37 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's a nice moment.
Yeah, we can't have Patton 477 Part 2. You know, I mean, they only got so much time. So they test it and they see that it is working quite well. BJ comes over and looks at it, and Potter comes over and approves. Winchester looks and says, "Primitive but functional." Which is why wouldn't he be happy about this? I mean, like, it's one thing to be cynical and say, "You guys are wasting your time. This is never going to work." But once it's working, I would think you'd be like, "Wow, great." Now we know that his ego will not allow him to let Hawkeye be right about anything.
Yeah.
But it is kind of like, this is going to materially benefit you, Charles.
Yeah.
Just own it already. You know, come on.
Yeah. Although in a way, Charles was right, because it wasn't anyone in the U.S. Army or the engineers that made it. It was
Mr. Shin,
a local. So yeah,
that's true. That is true. so we're in post-op. Hawkeye, BJ talked to Cohen, and who is absolutely thrilled. And he says, "I'm gonna. You guys did, but I want your names and addresses." He says, "I'm going to send you both Hanukkah gifts every Christmas for the rest of your lives." Very, very sweet. I love that. I love the, you know, I imagine the doctors don't get a lot of thanks from their patients because they're shipping them out. But I love that, you know, one guy's awake enough to know what has been done for him. He realizes, and to the point they even show him the clamp. You're the first person we ever tried it out on. He says, you know, well, something to tell your grandchildren about while you're bouncing them on that knee. So it's sweet. It's a really
it's a nice line, nice image.
Absolutely. And then they notice that there is an inscription on the clamp, which is "Overhill, Overdale, Korean clamp will never fail." And Hawkeye's like, "That's where he put the N." It's a great way to get that, you know, go out of the episode. It's really, really funny. So then we come back for our bumper scene. Mr. Shin is back. They compliment him for the clamp. And then he's like, "Oh, yeah, that was nothing. I open a whole new line of Mr. Shin surgical stuff." I love that. A whole new line. And so he pulls out a pearl-handled scalpel. And he says, "You'll look like $1 million with this in your hand." And we see that this thing, first of all, the scalpel is everyone knows what a scalpel looks like. It's a very tall, thin implement. This thing looks like it's like the size of a phaser from Star Trek. I mean, it's completely impractical that anyone would use it. But we see that, of course, it is basically a Swiss Army scalpel, because it can also be used as a spoon. And we see that he pulls it out, a can opener, and they're like, "No." A cuticle remover, a fork, "No." And then he says, "Corkscrew." And Hawkeye's like, "That we can use, sold." It's a great, great way to go out of the episode. And I would have loved if we had seen that prop in later episodes.
Yeah.
Just laying around the swamp. That would have been great if they had done it. I like to think that that prop exists somewhere, that some member of the MASH crew took it home when the show wrapped up, and it's in it's on somebody's shelf somewhere.
Yeah.
I never liked the idea of thought that all these wonderful props that, you know, these geniuses make for movies and TV just get thrown out once they're of no longer, use.
Yeah. No, I've never given that much thought, but yes, you're right. It would be a shame that, for them to just go to waste. That I'd rather think that they went to somebody and somebody got it on their shelf somewhere. And
I mean, somebody made it, it doesn't do the things. It obviously doesn't work the way it works in the show, but somebody actually had to sit there and build that thing in probably the 20th century prop workshop, and they shouldn't just throw it out. So I hope, like I said, maybe Alan Alda has it in his basement somewhere. You never know. But overall, I think this is just a really terrific episode. I think it's very funny. I love it when the A and B plots converge. I always find that to be really good writing, where they dovetail, which I think is great. It's got some great character stuff, great medical stuff, and it's very funny. So overall, I think this is one of like my favorites from this season.
Yeah, it's a good episode. The reason that I like MASH is because it combines humor and poignancy and drama. And I like that it doesn't treat its audience as idiots. You know, it treats us with some intelligence, and you get different types of humor. You get character based humor. You get visual gags. You know, everything is in there. And I think that's why it's still popular, you know, 50 years after it started. And you know, these episodes, even a sort of mid tier episode is still stands the test of time. And
absolutely, absolutely. I said it was a real pleasure rewatching this one. I mean, did you say it is kind of a mid tier episode, and we don't mean that in a sort of pejorative sense. It's just stakes are relatively low.
Yeah,
it's not. There's no memorable guest star. There's no big turn. You know, it's not one of the ones that like is ever going to be any like MASH greatest hits collection. But just watching it, I'm like, God, I'm laughing through this whole thing.
Yes,
you know? Like I'm just like it's got one great gag after the next, an ingenious way of getting out of the situation. It's a really, really good, and as you're right, that's why people were still here talking about it 50 years later, is that it's even these mid-level ones are still this good. So okay, so Andrea, do you have a favorite line or joke from the show?
Both of them have actually already been mentioned, but I there's two that stand out for me. There's the one that you mentioned, Colonel Potter. I remember when I wanted to get married, by the time the paperwork came through, my son was divorced. I know what bureaucracy is like and paperwork. So absolutely that resonated with me. And then the other one was the Charles operates faster than that when told that it'll be 90 days too. but gosh, so many great lines here, but they're the ones that stand out for me. Yeah, they're the ones that made me laugh the most.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good lines.
Yeah, BJ's wonderful aside there. Charles operates faster than that.
Yes.
My favorite one is when Hawkeye and BJ are in the nurse's tent and they're trying to pitch this, and the nurses get up to leave because Margaret has told them they have to redo the inventory, and they kind of like sullenly march out of the tent. And Margaret kind of looks at the two of them like, okay, what are you two for? And Hawkeye immediately goes into the spiel, you know, Margaret, and any great, and I love, she just goes, get out, get out, get out. Not taking any of their nonsense. She doesn't want to hear it. She knows it's a canned speech.
Yeah.
Hawkeye's got. So like, Loretta Swit delivers it. Just the way she doesn't even look at them. Like she's already looking down at her clipboard. You know, she's already just get out. She just,
she's heard it before. Yeah.
I love it. It's just a perfectly designed, perfectly delivered, line there. I mean, the line itself, get out, not inherently funny. It's the reading of it is the, you know,
yes,
cause, you know, just like, shut up, you two. I don't have time for this. Patton 4077. It's a terrific episode. And Andrea, as I said at the top of the show, I always enjoy your comments when they come in. I will admit, as I do the show for my own entertainment and to have these conversations with wonderful people, but I really do enjoy when a new episode pops up and then look at the website and I get notifications when comments come in, and your comments are always very, very funny. You've mentioned that one weird detail where you wrote the date of the Colonel's horse episode on your dresser drawer. What did you write it on again?
On my wardrobe door.
On your wardrobe.
Just on the inside. On the inside, so that whenever I opened it, I would see it. I don't think my mum knows about that, and she's going to listen to this.
Still have the wardrobe? Is that still in your
wardrobe,
parents' house?
The wardrobe is still there. I don't know if the scribble is still there.
Oh, you have to take a picture of that the next time you're there and send it to the show.
I will.
Please. I love what a weird, nerdy little girl you were, that you were like, and like, you didn't write the episode. Well,
no,
you didn't know the title.
I just wrote the date. But it goes back to my love of horses, I suppose.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's a horse centric episode.
It's 6th of June 1988. Yeah, so it might very well still be there, the scribble. I don't know.
and, you know, was it fate that it would give this away, everybody? We're recording this on the 6th of June.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's kismet. I love
definitely
that.
Fate. Yeah.
Oh, I hope it's still there. I really hope that scribble is still there. So, well, anyway. Andrea, yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That wasn't too bad. So that's my one new thing out the way this year. I'll have to.
There you go. Hey, we're off to a good start. I hope the second thing. I hope this. Okay, I'll say this. I hope the second thing is fun. But I hope it's not as fun as this was. That way this is
I'm sure it won't be.
Better thing in your mind. So and even if it is, don't tell me that it was.
Okay.
Right? So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Okay. You can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, brianwaterpodcast.com. You can of course subscribe to MASHcast on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be named checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, Kara Kay, Tim English, Adam Ackerman, Lisa P, Laura Braun, Stephen Van Skyke, Michael Kelly, and Daryl Clark. Thanks so much for the support, everybody. So we will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Called to ask you boys a special favor. We need to modify a hunk of surgical equipment. We can design it, but we can't make it. You can. Oh, that's swell. 90 days. That stinks.
90 days? Charles operates faster than that.
You're sure you can't spare one man right now? Wonderbar. Nice talking to you, and I'll try to remember you're on our side.